In Venezuela today, thousands of protesters are packing the streets of Caracas and other cities across the country to demand that President Nicolas Maduro step down and that humanitarian aid be allowed into the country. Maduro has so far blocked the aid, calling it a show and part of a Western plot to overthrow him. If history is any guide, Maduro has reason to be suspicious. Joining us now to discuss the history of U.S. intervention in Latin America are Ed Ayers and Brian Ballo, co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome. And let's start by going back to 1823 when President James Monroe changed the world's relationship with Latin America when he issued the Monroe Doctrine. Ed, tell us what that doctrine said.
Well, it basically said, hey, Europe, stay out of our entire hemisphere. We have absolutely no power to enforce that, but we really insist. And remarkably, it worked. And as the decades went by, more and more American politicians said, yeah, that's what we think. And it became sort of
a doctrine.
A doctrine almost. It began as kind of a faint suggestion.
Exactly.
And then it grew into a doctrine as the United States gained more power.
So we didn't want Europe to get engaged. And yet, later on, Teddy Roosevelt decided we could intervene ourselves in a place like Panama.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Jeremy. And of course, we've now moved to the 20th century, different times, a time when America was really flexing its military muscles on the international scene, along with its trade muscles. And, you know, the Panama Canal was very important for inter-American trade, not to mention international trade, and being able to take that shortcut through Colombia by cutting through, creating a valley and a canal, was very important to a lot of American business interests. And when the French gave up on their failed project to build a canal across Colombia, interests in the United States bought the French interest, and the United States government opened negotiations with Colombia. When Colombia balked the end of 1902 and 1903, well, it just so happens that the Panamanians revolted, and it just so happens that Colombian troops were bribed to put their arms down. And what do you know, the United States came in and supported the new nation of Panama in 1903.
Mm-hmm. Fast forwarding to the Cold War, the conflict that many people remember in the region is Guatemala. Why did the U.S. intervene there in 1954, and why does that intervention in particular outrage so many people today?
Well, the short answer and the kind of smart-alecky answer is bananas, because in 1951, a sort of a left-leaning leader came in and says, you know, it's not really fair that 9% of Guatemalans don't own the land that they farm, and that 40% of all the land in our country is owned by the United Fruit Company, an American-owned company. Mm-hmm. And so they have the idea of land reform, and here's the deal. We will buy the land at the rate that's listed on taxes, and then we will distribute it among the people of Guatemala. But the United Fruit Company and other large landowners, you'll be shocked to learn, had put artificially low prices mm-hmm. For the tax rolls on their land. And so they resisted this, and they launched a campaign to persuade the United States to get behind the resistance to this notion. And they, you know, got major media companies to go down, the New York Times and Christian Science Monitor and others, to go down and wrote stories that actually were favorable to the company. But the great concern, as you know, in the Cold War, of course, is that somehow there's going to be, you know, communism coming in. And sure enough, this guy buys some military supplies from the Soviet bloc, and this really ratchets things up. So the short version of it is the United States then has the CIA tried to depose this guy. He doesn't know the CIA is against him, so he actually appeals to the United States to help save him. After the CIA displaces the president of Guatemala, they put in their own guy and call him a liberator of the Guatemalan people. But you have 3 decades of a brutal civil war in which as many as 200,000 people died. So what you see here is that what began as sort of a business tension ends up becoming a really full-scale war.
And the U.S. intervened in a number of countries during and after the Cold War. Another big one I'm thinking about is Chile.
Yeah. Chile had elected a socialist head of state. I think it was the fall of 1970, Salvador Allende. The United States really started efforts to undermine his administration, well, pretty much before he was even inaugurated. Nixon and Kissinger just couldn't abide the thought that we were going to have a socialist in Chile. You know, what they had in mind was Fidel Castro, closer to home in Cuba. That was not a good thing for the United States, or they thought. And Allende lasted in office for about 3 years before a coup deposed him. And in fact, they attacked the palace that he was living in. And when they entered, they found Allende dead of a self-inflicted gun wound. Mm-hmm. The United States moved very quickly to support the general in charge of the coup, a man by the name of Pinochet. And Pinochet ruled for several decades in Chile with American support.
Now, Ed, you said that Guatemala was all about bananas. When we come back around to Venezuela and U.S. intervention there, is it all about oil, or was it in the beginning all about oil? Venezuela has the largest known oil reserves in the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Venezuela does have this incredible oil reserve that has been a blessing and a curse throughout its history, like so many other countries that find themselves with such an asset. They've ridden it up and down as the prices have gone up and have collapsed. They've done their best to control it by helping to found OPEC, along with Middle Eastern countries, and trying to moderate it. But the fact is that they felt kind of like the people in Guatemala. We have this asset in Guatemala, the land, in Venezuela, the oil, that we should be able to channel for the greater public use. And so people have talked all along for decades about nationalizing, and they have nationalized the oil companies. The problem, of course, is that when you place all your bets on oil, when the bottom drops out of it, the bottom drops out of these promises that you've made as well.
So, Brian, where are we now when it comes to U.S. intervention in Venezuela?
Well, we're waiting. The United States, along with dozens, I believe, of other countries, have supported the head of the legislative body, a man by the name of Guaido. And most experts on the situation in Venezuela are saying it's really a question of which way the middle levels of the military tilt. Certainly the upper echelons of the military are both extraordinarily well compensated, officially and unofficially, by Maduro. But it's not clear which way the middle levels are going to go. And Guaido actually has some ties to those middle levels. So a lot of people feel it's possible that the middle and bottom of the military will support Guaido.
Ed, as you look back at all of this, has it been net negative or net positive for the U.S. to ever get involved in its own hemisphere in this way?
Well, the United States has benefited enormously from the wealth of the hemisphere, taking advantage, especially through all the companies that have been doing business there, but also to have countries that have generally been either enticed or inclined to be friendly to us. You know, if you think about how it could be the United States would be so powerful in the world, not having a direct threat in its own hemisphere other than Cuba has been a remarkable gift.
And, you know, Jeremy, you asked me about what's going to happen in Venezuela. I mean, most knowledgeable people agree the one thing that might be able to save Maduro is the United States intervening because of the very long history that Latin Americans are very aware of.
That is Brian Ballo and Ed Ayers, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.